Welcome back to the Baseball America College Baseball Podcast. I'm Jacob Rudner. As always, I'm joined by Mr. Peter Flaherty. Peter, it's off-season mode. We're back for the first time in 2 weeks, as has always been the case. Tuesdays are our off-season day. For those of you who are new, Mondays during the season will be our Baseball America College Baseball Podcast day. We will also convert back to the weekly podcasts right now. Just with, you know, less college baseball content to discuss in a podcast format, we slowed it down. But Pete, loaded show today. That's the benefit of the two-week process. Before we get into it, how are you? What's the latest in Peterland? You and I are getting ready to go to Jupiter. You can tell the good people about that. And yeah, give us the Peter update.
Everything's great in Peterland, thank God. Like you said, we're gearing up to go down to Jupiter in a week and a half, which will be a great event to see some talented players and hang out and talk with a number of coaches. So that'll be a great event, as it always is. And then, you know, fall ball is underway. We had our first handful of scrimmages, not like team red versus team white over the weekend. We actually had teams playing each other. You can't really take much from it other than, you know, you have scrimmages to follow and, you know, you can see how guys have done. So ramping up a little bit. But, you know, as you said, when we head down to the Sunshine State, that'll be kind of the crescendo of the fall and a really good opportunity to see a lot of talented players. So a lot of stuff to look forward to, an exciting time, and should be a great finish to the fall.
No doubt about that. And we'll talk about that on the Baseball America College podcast. I'm sure also you can tune into the Baseball America Draft podcast, which also features Peter. And they're going to talk about that, I would imagine, quite a bit. The Jupiter experience and what you and I get to see out there. On our show today, though, we've got a lot of exciting stuff to cover. First, some news. Then we're going to get into a game that I'll explain better in a bit, where you and I are going to draft hitters and pitchers for the upcoming college season. Based on their performance, we will judge later who had the better team. I'll be keeping track of it here, and I'm sure we're going to revisit those lists as the year goes on. Maybe we'll do a full draft as well, but more on that in a second. For now, let's talk about what I find to be the biggest and most pressing news in college baseball, which is that according to Andrew Baggerly of The Athletic, Tony Vitello, Tennessee's head coach, is what he described as a dark horse candidate, a wild card candidate, for the San Francisco Giants job opening. The Giants recently parted ways with manager Bob Melvin, leaving an opening in their dugout. One of the names mentioned in Baggerly's story was Tony Vitello. I'm just going to come right out here and say it. I would think that that would be a major surprise at this point if Tony Vitello ended up as the San Francisco Giants manager. I'm not saying it's impossible, but after conversations with several sources, I have learned that if there have been conversations, they have been very, very minimal. I would even lean towards, at this point, there being very little conversation between the two sides with regard to the role. But, you know, you never know, and it does bring up an interesting point. Are we in an era with the speed that college players are reaching the major league level that some of these top-notch college coaches could find themselves in major league dugouts? I don't think we're that far off from it. I don't think that this is the example that is going to end up becoming, you know, kind of the landmark transition that starts to open the floodgates a little bit, if you will. But I do think it's something that could happen soon. I just don't think it's Tony Vitello.
Yeah, I'm with you. I thought it was really interesting to see reported, and it kind of got my wheels turning in my head a little bit about how that would look and, you know, the comparison between the two. Obviously managing the San Francisco Giants as opposed to, you know, being the head coach of the Tennessee Volunteers, there are some similarities, but also a whole lot of differences. So it'd be an unorthodox, outside the box type of hire. But like you said, I didn't really spend a whole lot of time thinking about it because, I mean, simply put, I would be floored beyond belief if it ends up coming to fruition. And that's not an indictment on Coach Vitello. He's one of the best college coaches in the game. I just don't think that it'll happen right now, but like you said, it was interesting to just see it mentioned and kind of kicked around.
And I do still think, you know, to reiterate one more time, that we are getting closer to a point in college baseball where I think some of the best college baseball coaches are going to start to find their ways into major league dugouts. Whether that's as a major league manager or not, I don't know. That's a really big step. And it doesn't happen very often like it does, you know, maybe slightly more occasionally in the college football or basketball ranks. Baseball is a little bit different. We do see assistant coaches make the jump quite frequently. And in recent years, we've actually seen a lot of professional coaches become college coaches. So the pipeline is very interesting in our sport, Peter. We'll see how much it continues to evolve over the next couple of years. I think NIL is going to be a factor that pushes coaches to maybe make some decisions to move on to the professional ranks if they have the opportunity. But again, not a knock on Tony Vitello in the slightest. It's not a matter of his candidacy that I think is going to keep him out of this job race. I just think it's such a long shot in terms of where the Giants are at in their process, maybe some of the people who they're considering, and just how Tony Vitello has been engaged with the Giants to this point. I know that he has a good relationship with people in that organization, and they probably have had some sort of conversation over the course of the last month with regard to maybe his former players. Drew Gilbert in particular has made some noise and become kind of a spirited leader very quickly in San Francisco. I'm sure that has been a conversation. Whether or not the managerial position, though, has been discussed, I don't know that it's been that intense, and I don't think it'll get that intense. But we'll see, and yeah. It's worth mention on the pod.
A question, it might be kind of a stupid one. Sure. Do you think Coach V would even want to? He's got a pretty great thing going at Tennessee. I mean, he's built that program to be where it is today. They're a national powerhouse. They compete for a national title year in and year out. They're a machine. I don't know if he'd even want to leave that.
You know, it's tough. I think on one hand, yes, and I believe anybody would if you're in baseball for two reasons. One, I think Tony Vitello has kind of accomplished whatever, you know, the most that you can accomplish already in a very short time at the college level. He's won a College World Series. His team is one of the best in the SEC. And by the way, I think it's notable that he turned Tennessee from kind of zero to hero in the SEC. So a turnaround project in a conference where that's really, really hard to do. And so maybe there is some line of thinking, I've done it and I can get out of here while the NIL is still kind of picking up, as there's a lot of uncertainty in college sports. Do I opt in for something with more stability? The second thing I would add is that there is something to be said for the opportunity to go win a World Series, not a college World Series, but the real deal World Series. That's kind of every baseball person's dream. But I do think that for some coaches who have this dynasty potential in college baseball, the appeal to leave is probably not terribly strong. I'm talking about guys like Jay Johnson. Do I think that Jay Johnson, if he got the San Francisco Giants offer, would be on the next flight to San Francisco from Baton Rouge? No, I don't think so. I think that he would probably be very invested in what he has going for him right now. They're two-time national champions in the last 3 years. Is it the best opportunity to go and try and, you know, bring a major league club out of the mud after, you know, several years now of not performing to the standards of what that club has been historically? Probably not. I don't know that it's that appealing. But listen, I do think Tony Vitello would be a really good emotional fit for that club. They're young. They're trying to get better. They need somebody who's going to come in and be spirited. I think he checks every single one of those boxes. He's proven that he can turn a team around and win quickly. It is a completely different ballgame, though, managing a major league team versus a college team. And whether or not somebody who's had a tremendous amount of success, he's the second highest paid coach in the sport for a reason. Is this the right opportunity to jump on? I'm not sure. It's not for me to say. I'm not 100% sure, but I think it would be considered is the way I would put it. I don't know that it would be something that he or several others in his stratosphere of college coaching would go racing towards. You agree?
Yeah. Again, I'd be real shocked if it ends up happening. It's, you know, I'm with you that he is the intangibles and managerial and leadership qualities to have success really in any role in which he finds himself. I think he's a little bit of a chameleon in that way, and in the most positive of ways, because I mean, it's, you know, the buy-in that he gets consistently year over year is really impressive, and the results speak for themselves in a business that is results oriented. I mean, he's the creme de la creme, but you know, the season is you know, you go from 52 to 55-ish plus games to 162. It's a little bit of more of a revolving door with the number of players you're going to have. The personalities obviously are a little bit different, perhaps more egotistical, albeit though in the NIL era, you know, everyone's egos are coming out in one way or another. But again, I don't think it ends up happening when all is said and done, but the fact that he was even mentioned and it was reported on is, you know, means that there, it's a non-zero possibility. You know, the reporter who reported it from The Athletic, you know, he's the real deal. And it's also a testament to what Coach Vitello has done and how highly he's regarded in the space, and rightfully so.
We are going to take a quick break, and after that, more on our little game that we're going to play in today's episode of the podcast.
AJ, let's talk steaks. Omaha Steaks, to be precise. Big, big discounts we'll tell you about coming up in just a sec on the website. But also, every steak is perfectly aged to maximize tenderness and hand-cut by master butchers in America's heartland. It's been around since 1917. They know what they're doing.
Absolutely, they know what they're doing. They come prepackaged, perfect sizes, portion size. You can get any kind of cut you want, any kind of meat you want, and it all comes out delicious. You can freeze it. You can thaw it right away. There's hamburgers, there's steaks, there's chicken, there's pork chops, there's everything you could ever want, and it comes out delicious every time.
Save big with Omaha Steaks. Visit omahasteaks.com for 50% off site-wide and an extra 20% off select favorites during their early Black Friday sale. And for an extra $35 off, use promo code FOUL at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details. That's 50% off at omahasteaks.com. Promo code FOUL at checkout. Terms apply. See site for details.
All righty. We are back with more Baseball America College Baseball podcast. One thing before we get into what's next here for our show, I do want to plug the website. Head on over to baseballamerica.com/college. Check out all of the content Peter and I have going up on the website right now. And it is actually quite a bit between fall ball, you know, 2026 draft stuff. Carlos Collazo wrote an excellent piece on Rock Chalowski, the presumed number one overall pick in 2026. And I highly recommend reading all of it. So again, that's baseballamerica.com/college. But for us right now, Peter, we are going to do something that I've been looking forward to for weeks, and that is drafting a team, a unique team. This is not a full starting lineup of college players ahead of the 2026 season that we are going to keep track of. This is a little bit of a competition. Whoever drafts the best and most productive team, which will be judged by a panel of our colleagues at the end of the year, will win. What? I don't know. Pride. And maybe an opportunity to talk about how the other one is not as intelligent on the podcast. But here's the rules. It's very simple. Each of us are going to draft four hitters and three pitchers. One of the three pitchers has to be a reliever. And again, we'll go back at the end of the year and compare notes. And so without further ado, Peter, your first overall pick, who is it and why?
Oh man, I get 1-1 here.
You get 1-1. I'm giving it.
Wow. All right. Yeah. Well, for me, it was kind of set it and forget it. I'll take the man, Rock Chalowski, shortstop at a UCLA. We spent a lot of time in the last couple of weeks talking about him, whether it be Carlos's excellent piece that you referenced over on the website, baseballamerica.com. Carlos and I also did a deep dive on Rock that was about 50 minutes on our draft podcast last week. And today he's the golden boy, and he's the 1-1 in our fantasy draft, so to speak. Maybe it's a harbinger of what's to come this July. But anyways, it's a whole lot of what it looks like with Rock. He was the National Player of the Year last year for us. He hit 350 with 19 doubles, 23 homers, and 74 RBIs. You know, it's a really smooth and rhythmic swing with a smattering of above average to plus tools across the board. I guess where this is production-based, you know, I can't really spend too much time talking about the defense, but the defense with him is easily plus, and he's got gold glove upside with buttery smooth actions, a plus arm, comfortability attacking the baseball, and a knack for making the highlight reel type of play. But he's consistently on the barrel, grew into a lot more impact between his freshman and sophomore years. The batted ball data ticked up across the board last season, which led to a huge uptick in power. So again, it's a smattering of above average to plus tools, and you know, he's got the ability to be, you know, a highly impactful player in a number of different ways. So I thought this was a no-brainer.
Easily the number one overall pick would have been mine if I gave myself the opportunity to pick first. And one thing I will add from the history standpoint, we've never had at Baseball America the same player win player of the year in back-to-back years. So Rock Chulowski has about as good a chance as anybody to be able to do that. We also haven't had a whole lot of guys win that award as non-draft eligible players. He became just the sixth to do that in 2025. Obviously, that UCLA team has the potential to go very long ways in 2026, I would imagine. Again, it's very early. Still got fall and a lot of the preseason to get through. That will be UCLA, our number one team to open the year with Rock Chulowski at the front of it. And again, if he wins player of the year, he would become the first ever to win it back-to-back seasons. And now, Peter, it is time for my first pick. You got who I believe to be the best hitter in the country and perhaps the best overall player. I'm going to take who I believe to be one of, if not the best pitchers in the country. And that is my good friend Dax Whitney from over at Oregon State. Could I have gone with Cameron Flueke or Liam Peterson or Tommy Lepore or Jackson Flora in this position? Absolutely. Those guys are your most prominent 2026 draft eligible pitchers. However, as we wrote on the website when we did our way too early annual predictions for national awards, I just think Dax Whitney brings something to the table that is going to be very hard to deny if you are a draft eligible pitcher trying to compete for pitcher of the year. Dax Whitney is super advanced. He struck out over 100 batters last season. He's into the mid 90s, upper 90s even. He's got a curveball that was outstanding throughout his freshman season, this top down, very biting curveball. There's a slider in there that's really good. The ability to throw strikes is advanced for his age. He's got some funky mechanics that I think toy with hitters that are just not ready for the stuff he brings. This is somebody who I believe is easily a professional quality baseball player and could have skipped the whole college route if he wanted to, but he chose Oregon State. I think he made a great decision. He pitched them to a College World Series appearance last year. I think he has the potential to do it again. And if he does, we're talking about what I believe to be one of the best pitchers in the country. So is this your top draft guy for 2026? No, he's not even eligible. But I do think that I got somebody who has a chance to be our pitcher of the year. And even if he doesn't win it, he will be in the conversation barring something unforeseen.
That's a great pick. And as you said, both in our way too early awards predictions and also in your rationale, I mean, there's an argument to be made that he's the best pitcher in the country, regardless of class. The stuff is outstanding. Obviously, you know, the body's great, but it's a really enticing combination of stuff and strikes with Dax, and it's primo stuff. Like, he turned down top two round money out of high school, opted to make his way to Corvallis, and, you know, there's a real chance that he's a top five to top 10 pick in a little under 2 years. It's all very real with him. So with that being said, I sound like some kid making a notes app post saying he's going to enter the transfer portal. But with that being said, hitter two, I'm stacking up on hitters right now. Hitter two for me is going to be TCU outfielder Sawyer Strawsnyder.
Nice.
Tools is the name of the game with Mr. Strawsnyder. Kind of went through typical freshman growing pains last year, was hitting .167 through like March 2nd or 3rd, but he flipped a switch and just, you know, exploded. He ended up hitting .350 with 13 doubles, led the country with 10 triples, 11 homers, and 51 RBIs, was the Big 12 freshman of the year, like tooled out, fits that description to a T. Tons of bat speed, plus raw power, particularly to the pull side with him. Plus arm, and he's also a plus runner, consistently turns in plus run times, center fielder by trade, but probably ends up shifting over to a corner spot as he progresses to pro ball. And I think the biggest key for him going forward is if he can add a coat or two of polish to his hit tool. Though this year, the bat to ball skills were above average on pitches in the strike zone, which was encouraging. Like, the contact ability for me was a pleasant surprise with Sawyer. And for what it's worth, from where I stand, like a potential dark horse 1-1, depending on how much of a dark horse you even want to call Sawyer Strawsnyder. It's not like this is a deep pull at all. He is a kind of a sleeper 1-1 type of guy for me this year. I think he's got that kind of upside. So I'll snag him with my second hitter. And I guess I'll throw it back to you. I'm happy with my first two picks, though.
I would be happy with your first two picks as well. And I'll add Sawyer Strohsnyder. If we had to rank our freshman of the year in 2025, I'd be very comfortable saying that he would have finished second for that award behind Dylan Volantis from Texas, who won it. Derek Curiel, maybe a tied for second type situation. You are stacking up on pitching, or excuse me, on hitting. I'm going to take this opportunity to snag who I believe to be the best hitters. Excuse me. Wow. I'm all confused here. I'm going to take this opportunity to snag the best pitchers in the country. Cameron Flueke is my next pick. I think if there was, you know, a group of guys who have a chance to win pitcher of the year, and if Dax is my 1A, Cameron Flueke from Coastal Carolina is my 1B. The fastball quality is outstanding. I remember last year during the College World Series, you and I had some data up on the screen when we were doing our live show from Omaha, and Cameron Flueke, we were having a conversation, started to look, especially in Omaha, and obviously it was the case before getting to the College World Series and the rest of the world really started paying attention to him, but it really, really looked like somebody who could be the first pitcher off the board. It was SP1 quality stuff for the draft. He's got good control. The fastball is up to 98 with great life through the top of the zone. He's got a couple off-speed pitches that I think are impressive, and I do believe that this is going to be the kind of year where he has a chance to step up and lead the Shants perhaps back to Omaha, which would be the first time they've appeared in the College World Series in back-to-back seasons. High-quality arm, high-quality stuff, and like you predicted, potentially the pitcher of the year. He was your pick for that, so I mean, I'll actually let you talk about my pick more than I will, but I am, like you, excited about my first two picks because I think my rotation is going to be stacked, Peter.
Yeah, I mean, it already is stacked with Whitney and Flueke. That's as dynamite a duo as I think that's out there. So, I mean, you hit on it with Flueke. He was my pitcher of the year pick for a reason. Not that that was all a hot take or not, but was excellent last spring and it was kind of spearheaded the Shants turn, you know, really spearheaded their efforts all year. I mean, he was the anchor of that pitching staff, him and Jacob Morrison, and the pitching staff really kind of turns into his own this spring with the departure of Jacob Morrison to the draft. But really, really high-end stuff, as you cited, like mid to upper 90s heater with plus carry through the zone. The mid-70s curveball was a real revelation this spring. It flashed above average with some depth and bite and generated a 49% whiff rate, and the slider in which he rounds out his arsenal with, it's distinct in shape. And it's also really effective. And he's also kind of shown a mid to high 80s changeup that is it's an intriguing fourth pitch. So, I mean, it's a deep arsenal. It strikes, it's stuff. It's a really good body. I mean, when you start to bucket Flueke out and see which boxes he checks, it's a whole lot. And that's obviously for this spring in terms of production. I have no doubt he's going to go out and dominate each Friday for Coastal, but also for the draft. Like, you know, this is an arm that you're only going to let slip for so long. Like, I think that there's no doubt top half of the first round type of upside here with Flueke. So that's a dynamite pick. For my third pick, I guess I'm just going to keep on rolling here with the theme of hitters and take Virginia outfielder AJ Gracia. Cemented himself as one of the premier freshmen in college baseball his freshman year at Duke. Got off to kind of a sluggish and slow start last spring. He was hitting just 188 through April 3rd. So we're not talking about like three bad series. Like he was on the struggle bus through the first week in April, but he made a handful of small tweaks to his stance and operation that really paid off in dividends. Kind of lower his handset, closed off his front side a little bit, and there was less of sort of this bat wrap and hand press or load, whatever you want to call it, in his load. And as a result, he just got in a way better position to hit and do damage. So with that, finished the year just as productive, if not a little bit more, than as a freshman. He had 293 with 15 homers, 57 walks to just 36 Ks. Pro body, really aesthetically pleasing swing with a lot of hand speed, can drive the baseball to all fields. He, you know, simply put, he doesn't chase. He chased at just an 18% clip last season. Feel for the barrel. It's all fields type of impact. It's a really, you know, exciting hit power combo. I think he's going to be a key producer this year for Virginia, along with Eric Becker, Joe Tiroli, and others. That's going to be a really good team in and of itself. But I'll take AJ Gracia as my third hitter.
Getting the right people in the door quick is critical to maintain your company's workflow. When it comes to hiring, Indeed is all you need. Stop struggling to get your job post seen on other job sites. Indeed Sponsored Jobs helps you stand out and hire fast. With Sponsored Jobs, your post jumps to the top of the page for your relevant candidates so you can reach the people you want faster. And it makes a huge difference. According to Indeed data, Sponsored Jobs posted directly on Indeed have 45% more applications than non-sponsored jobs. One of the things I love about Indeed is that it makes hiring so fast because it puts the best and most qualified candidates in front of you quickly. Plus, with Indeed Sponsored Jobs, there are no monthly subscriptions, no long-term contracts, and you only pay for results. How fast is Indeed? In the minute I've been talking to you, 23 hires were made on Indeed, according to Indeed data worldwide. There's no need to wait any longer. Speed up your hiring right now with Indeed. Listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/baseballamerica. Just go to Indeed.com/baseballamerica right now and support our show by saying you heard about Indeed on this podcast. Indeed.com/baseballamerica. Terms and conditions apply. Hiring? Indeed is all you need. I'm just going to keep things rolling here with my first hitter of the day. Listen, I know, and we've talked about this on the podcast, that there is a split camp when it comes to how the pro scouting community feels about Georgia Tech outfielder Drew Burris in terms of his draft prospect status. On one hand, there are a lot of people who look at the 5'9", 175-pound outfielder and they go, you are undersized. We are worried about how much power you're actually going to be able to translate to a wood bat. Are you the dreaded metal bat merchant that's going to make a team regret the early first-round draft pick? Because that's what it's going to be. There are other people who think that this is a super athletic, super twitchy, super, you know, fast hand speed type of hitter who's going to be able to stick at a premium position, and they're really excited about him. Either way, though, Peter, and this is the point I'm trying to make, I think that this is going to be one of, if not the most productive hitters in college baseball in 2026. For all the talk that there is, and rightfully so, about Rock Chalowski, there probably needs to be more conversation, and we're responsible for that, for Drew Burris. And I just think that this is going to be a great year for him. So I am picking Drew Burris. Last year was great. Batted .333, 23 doubles, 19 homers, just an 18% chase rate as a sophomore. He has legitimate power that we've seen at the college level. Whether or not that translates to pro ball, we will see. But, you know, undeniable with metal in his hands. So I am excited about the what feels like near guaranteed production from Drew Burris. Again, this is not about draft position. It's not about how the pro community feels about these players. The game that we're playing is purely to put together the most productive list of 2026 college baseball players. I feel very good about having Drew Burris on my team. What you got?
So it's funny. You took the words right out of my mouth, both with the Burris pick and then also the rationale, because up until I said AJ Gracia, I was wrestling also with Drew Burris. So I can't argue with any of that. It's for all the reasons that you said. In terms of college producers, there's a chance he's at the top of a couple of statistical categories when we circle back in June. Like, I mean, he's got Golden Spikes finalist type of upside. There's that type of performance in the tank, and not to discount the tools with Burris. I mean, he's not everyone's cup of tea when it comes to the draft. I can't even say that I'm personally on the higher end of the spectrum with him, but you know, there are legit tools here with Burris. You know, there's a, you know, he's got a plus arm. He can run, thump in the stick. I'm curious to see how that will translate professionally. If that's a little bit of a tell as to how I feel, but no, the tools with him are very real. And he's going to be the straw that serves the drink for the third straight year for Georgia Tech and a stacked Georgia Tech team at that. So I think finally I'll dip in to the pitching side of things because I feel really confident actually that I'm not going to get pickpocketed by you on my fourth hitter, even though that we always are, you know, kind of on the same wavelength with how we think guys we consider and whatnot. I actually do feel really confident you're not going to snag my fourth hitter, but man, for my first pitcher, I'm going to take, and I might be picking your pocket here to an extent. Well, actually no, cause you got to take a reliever. So, yeah. I'll take Jackson Flora, UC Santa Barbara, right-hander. I know you were wrestling with taking him with, you know, each of your first couple of picks at on the pitching side, but he was a legit arm and logged meaningful innings for them as a freshman. But it was an uptick across the board last season at Santa Barbara, and he kind of stepped into that a way more prominent role, piggybacking off of Tyler Bremner, with Bremner being the Friday guy and Jackson being the Saturday guy, but pitched to a 3.6 ERA with 86 Ks to just 17 walks across 75 innings. You know, with Tyler Bremner gone now to professional baseball, he was the second overall pick of the Los Angeles Angels. Flora is now going to take the reins of the rotation and kind of serve as that anchor. And I'm really excited to see him do it because I think that, you know, he's going to continue to thrive. You know, he's a long, lean kid at 6'5 and 205 pounds. Little bit of an efforty look in his delivery. There's, you know, it's accompanied by a bit of a head whack, but, you know, it's a whippy arm stroke with no shortage of arm speed. He relies really heavily on his fastball slider combo, and the two made up for 94% of the pitches he threw last spring. The heater sits in the mid to upper 90s, but it's been up to 100. Explodes out of the hand, ton of life through the zone, and it plays especially well in the top third, thanks to its riding life. And he's also shown the ability to run it in on the hands of right-handed hitters and just kind of be a knuckle eater, so to speak. But the sweeper here with Flora, it's a pitch that consistently flashes. Plus, it's got a ton of late lateral bite, but he's also got enough feel for it where he can manipulate its shape and back foot it to left-handed hitters. So he's not completely anemic against left-handed hitters, given kind of the lack of a third pitch right now. The changeup is more under construction, and he's working on trying to develop a kick change. But he's got plus feel for the fastball slider combo, and his command is rather advanced. Like, the quality of strikes is there. So be curious to see what the arsenal looks like this spring. You know, he's got a chance to dominate, and, you know, he's going to be one of the premier arms on the West Coast.
No doubt about that. I also add, there is a changeup in there. When I saw him live in person, there was a changeup that flashed at least average at points. It's a work in progress, but with his command and arm speed, I do have confidence that that could be a pitch that just continues to excel his profile into the top of the draft. Another one of those guys who sits right there with Liam Peterson and Cameron Flukie as a potential very early name off the board. I have to go back to hitting because I'm not yet ready to take a reliever. And so I'm going to go with more what feels like guaranteed production here with Ace Reese. I just think that is a guy who's going to be very successful this year. And I will add, I know that he probably wasn't picking your pocket there, but I know you like him. Last year, he was one of the best hitters in the country, hit .352 with 18 doubles, 21 homers, 66 RBIs, was the SEC newcomer of the year and a second team All-American for us. It was great in the Cape and then joined Team USA. And went to Japan, really physically built 6'3", 205 pounds. He's athletic, compact, powerful hitter. He's got great bat speed, efficient hips. And then the strength is matched with great barrel accuracy. Last year produced a 90th percentile exit velocity of 105 miles per hour, 55% hard hit rate. Really good bat. Somebody who's probably going to make a lot of noise this year for Mississippi State. These kinds of guys who have strong arms and fast bats tend to have productive years, especially in the SEC where the ball flies just a little bit further. And I've got a lot of confidence in Ace Reese. So I feel as though I'm stacking up on a lot of home runs here with Drew Burris and Ace Reese. And I think that's going to help me when we play this game later on in the year.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I think that between the two of them, you're looking at, you know, and it's crazy to say it, but realistically, I think 40 plus homers. I mean, you hit on it with Reese, like the offensive profile with him is really exciting, particularly the impact he's able to generate. I mean, he consistently is on the barrel, generates high quality contact on a regular basis. He's a plus power guy. Yeah. I mean, he's going to be the centerpiece of Mississippi State yet again. So I'm, again, very confident my pocket's not going to get picked on my fourth hitter. So I'm going to keep on rolling here with my pitchers. And I'm going to take – so it's kind of crazy that Liam Peterson is still on the board, and I'm wrestling with it in real time, as both you and the listeners can hear. But I'm going to take TCU righty Tommy Lepore.
Nice pick.
I know that – again, man, Peterson's really hard to pass up on, but I can't go back now. Really,
well,
like
actually, let me interrupt you. He just went undrafted officially because you have to take a reliever next, so nobody's gonna have Liam Peterson in our game.
Yeah, so man, that's probably one of the more surprising guys to go undrafted. But anyways, I don't want to keep it too chalky and just have it relegated to the top, I don't know, five or six players. But anyways, was initially a member of the Wichita State Shockers and pitched his way into their weekend rotation as a freshman and had really impressive results. But then he, like so many others, entered the portal, committed to TCU. And over the course of last season, he established himself as TCU's most reliable arm. Compiled a 3.09 ERA with 88 strikeouts to 27 walks and 90 and a third innings. Big time arm strength. He's armed with a mid to upper 90s fastball that's been up to 100 with decent carry in the top half of the zone. Supplements his fastball with a really effective low to mid 80s slider that, you know, flashes 2-plane tilt. And a changeup, for my money's worth, is consistently flashes above average. That'll flash both arm side fade and late tumble. The slider and changeup respectively generated miss rates of 42% and 34%. So obviously from a draft prospect standpoint, Lepore is an impressive arm in and of himself. We have him ranked inside the top 30 or perhaps even inside the top 25 on our most recent BA 2020 600, which is as of like August. So I mean, everyone has a very freshly updated report, but from a production standpoint, it's not a hot take at all to say that Lepore has Big 12 pitcher of the year type of upside. Like, I think that's more cold than it is a hot take, but again, where the name of the game here is production, I feel confident in this pick. And then as a draft prospect, you know, it's like every arm we've talked about, there's a, you know, he can command the baseball. There's, you know, two probably at least above average pitches in there in the tank with Lepore, and he looks the part of a starter professionally. So just this big kind of physical workhorse kid, just with a really exciting mound presence. I remember last year, I forget who it was against, but he was deep into a game, like over 100 pitches, and the camera zoomed in on him, and he was like just so locked in, this like blinders down, like tunnel vision. Like, it looked like the only two people on earth were him and the hitter. And he reared back and threw a fastball like 100 that was elevated with carry and just blew the doors off the kid. So that's a long-winded answer of saying that I'm excited to have Lepore on my squad.
Yeah, one of my favorite pitchers in the country this year. I considered him very highly when we were making our preseason predictions for awards, or our way too early award predictions. I'm going to do my best here, Peter, to pick your pocket on this hitter. This
I'm telling hitter. You you're not going to, though it will be someone I've considered.
You know what? That I can tell you for sure that you've considered this person because I know you like him. I'm going to go with Trey Broussard, the outfielder from Houston. I have a lot of power in my ranks right now, but I really could use some excellent athleticism, and I feel like I get that with Broussard. Hit 292 with 20 extra base hits and notably 31 stolen bases for the Cougars. Then he hit 296 over the summer while taking home Cape League All-Star Game MVP honors. Quick hands, more of a hit over power profile, although I wouldn't be surprised to see him grow into a little bit more power this season. His speed allows him to turn balls in the gaps into extra bases very quickly. The athleticism plays in center field, where I think he'll be able to stick as a professional. He's got great range. He makes good reads. He looks like a pro defender at the position, which is big time. It's not necessarily the flashiest name on this list, and I don't know that it's going to produce the flashiest stats, but I do believe that he adds to my team two things. Great center field defense, which is going to be really hard to quantify, although I'm sure our colleagues will find a way to do it. But then the run numbers. I don't know that I have the run numbers on my roster yet. He will certainly bring them after stealing 30-plus. He has a chance to be in that 30-plus, maybe even hit 40 stolen bases if he's really productive this year and hits over 300. And then again, like I said, I do think that there's more power in the tank and in his immediate future with a metal bat in his hand. So Trey Broussard from Houston, come on down. Team Rudd.
Awesome pick, because I was kind of reserving hitter four, so to speak, as like a dark horse guy, as okay. I'm sure you are slash were as well. And he was someone that I kicked around, like spark plug in every sense of the word. Kind of had a coming out party a little bit on the Cape, was the All-Star Game MVP. It's a really kind of intriguing and exciting tool set on both sides of the baseball. Obviously, offensively, it's hit over power, like the bat to ball skills and contact ability, just the hit tool in general, outweighs the current impact and the impact he projects to grow into. But he's a plus runner, as you said. Looks every bit the part of a pro center fielder. I think he's going to be a really high producer for Houston this year. I mean, I'd be shocked if he doesn't lead off for him, just given his profile. But like, I mean, I would not be surprised at all if he ends up hitting 320, 330, like you said, with a number of stolen bases, 30 to 35 plus, if not more. And I also wouldn't be surprised, even though he's not currently on our college top 100, I have a good feeling that he will be when we, you know, kind of make some tweaks to it after the fall and update it a little bit. I think he'll be on there. And I also think there's a chance that he's a top 2-round draft pick. When all is said and done, I think he is that kind of upside. So, as you can tell, I do really like that pick. I guess for the sake of suspense, I'll save my fourth hitter until my last pick. Now, as you cited at the top, we have to have a reliever, for our last pitcher, and coming up with this one was actually a little bit hard because you don't know necessarily who's going to be a team's reliever, you know, until these roles are actually carved out. So I guess to walk people through my thinking, obviously Dylan Villanis last year was one of the premier bullpen arms in college baseball. There was no doubt about that, but he, for all intents and purposes, like, I think he's probably going to make the leap into Texas's rotation this year. So I strayed away from him. Another reliever that I really like is Isaiah Magdaleno of Hawaii. However, I also think that he's going to make the leap into Hawaii's rotation. So I don't want to end up with no saves on my roster. So, again, to sound like an athlete entering the transfer portal, with that being said, I am going to take – ooh, I'm down to two guys here. Man. All right, I got to just pull the trigger on it. I'm going to take, in the situation of winning games and save situations, guys who are definitely going to close, I'm going to take Texas A&M right-hander MJ Bollinger.
Nice.
He was nails in relief last year for Florida Atlantic. Was their closer all the way. 28 appearances, all of which came in relief. Pitched to an ERA just over 2 at 2.01. Not collected 10 saves, 39 punch-outs, and 44 and two-thirds innings. Like, I feel really confident in him. You know, obviously sticking as kind of a higher leverage reliever, but also racking up his fair share of saves in Aggieland. He's a really good reliever and was a nice get, kind of an underrated get for my money's worth out of the portal for Coach Early and company. But three pitch mix armed with a low 90s fastball that's been up to 94. And then both high 70s to low 80s slider and upper 70s changeup are both effective off speeds. Does a really nice job of staying off the barrel, above average command across the board. So I think that he's going to be a consistent getter of saves. That was phrased so eloquently, but I'm confident in him anchoring my one man bullpen.
I'm going to take a reliever now too. I thought for sure there was a chance that my pocket would be picked on my reliever pick, but alas, it was not. I'm going to go with Santiago Garcia from LSU, the Oregon transfer left-hander. I am very excited about what Santi Garcia brings to Baton Rouge, and I think pitching coach Nate Yeske would agree with that sentiment. There's a lot of potential here. 91 to 93 miles per hour, tickles 95, but the movement on that pitch is absurd. Last year at Oregon, averaged 22.5 inches of induced vertical break. He has interesting release traits, including some pretty solid extension. He went to his fastball nearly 70% of the time last year and still produced a 25% miss rate with the pitch. On top of that, though, he has a low 80s high spin curveball that produced a 41% miss rate in 2025. So between the release characteristics, an unreal fastball that has, according to a couple sources, been really lights out in the fall so far in Baton Rouge, plus the curveball, plus a changeup that I think has average potential, plus the fact that with Hyannis over the summer in the Cape, he threw 11 scoreless innings with 15 strikeouts. I believe we are looking at somebody who has a chance to be one of the best relievers in the country in 2026. And we know that these guys who kind of catch on quick at LSU have a chance to do big things. He's going to be at LSU for two more years. So not only are we looking at somebody who has outstanding potential as a reliever this year, but I think with continued development under Nate Yeske, which a lot of these guys are doing really well lately, he has a chance to potentially be a 2027 starter type with some really standout stuff that just needs to continue to progress. But for right now, a really good bet to end up in their bullpen, and I think somebody who's going to be productive.
Yeah, I mean, the fastball with him is, there are a lot of outlier traits there, as you said. He averaged almost 23 inches of ride last spring at Oregon, and he pairs that with a pretty flat approach angle. So it literally, like, in the top half of the zone, and you want to, get down to the nitty gritty of it a little bit more, like in the top third of the zone and really elevated, legit looks like a rise ball or a ski ball for opposing hitters. And, it helps it play up above its low 90s to, 94, 95 mile an hour velocity. And like you said, he's not a one trick pony with the fastball, both his curveball, that flashes a ton of depth and sharp downward bite, and the low 80s changeup that flashes late tumble. Like, those two are legitimate secondary weapons and whiff generators. Like, between the spring at Oregon and the Cape with Hyannis, the curveball and changeup generated respective miss rates of 44% and 59%. And to translate, and keep it simple, that's pretty good. That's actually really good. So that's an awesome pick as your reliever. And I think that, you know, just from an excitement standpoint, it's a great pick. And then also from a production standpoint, you know, he's going to be a key arm for LSU. So now for the pick that I've been teasing for the better part of, I don't know, the last 20 or so minutes, I'm going to take my final hitter and round out my draft with Texas Tech outfielder Logan Hughes. And so last, you know, he started his career at Stetson, was had a, you know, for a freshman, had a really productive year, hit a shade over 290 with 20 extra base hits, ended up transferring to Texas Tech, where last year he hit 327 with 13 doubles, 19 homers, 58 RBIs, and more walks than strikeouts. And then he had a strong stint on the Cape that lasted 24 games, so just over half the summer. It's the bat. It's all about the bat with Hughes, both with my rationale as to why I'm taking him, but also as to, you know, his draft stock and what, you know, like for me, when I was writing him up last week in my 10 underrated college draft prospects piece, like I think the bat alone with Hughes is going to be enough to warrant, you know, a top two round, top 50, perhaps overall pick. It's a really simple operation in the box, with minimal moving parts. There's a ton of bat speed. He's shown the ability to drive the baseball with authority to all fields while consistently being on the barrel. It's just a real tantalizing hit power combo. Like on top of his plus bat to ball skills, last spring he had an overall end zone contact rate of 91%. His raw power to me also grades out as plus. You know, the under the hood numbers and data are just as impressive, if not more impressive, than kind of the back of the baseball card numbers. The, you know, he posted an average EV exit velocity last spring of 94.4 and a 90th percentile exit velocity of 106.7, a hard hit percentage over 60%. So again, defensively profiles as like a left field first base type. But the bat's going to carry him both this spring and beyond as he progresses through professional baseball. So I think he's going to be a 20 plus homer guy for Texas Tech, and take a lot of kind of make a national name for himself this spring with his performance. It's a really, really appealing offensive profile.
All righty. This is it. Last pick of the draft. I'm surprised that this guy is available still. Rock Chalowski, Peter, is the best shortstop in this class. He's probably the best shortstop prospect in a decade coming out of college baseball. But if there's a guy in this year's draft who I think has a chance to make not as much noise, not going to be Rock Chalowski, but a guy who has a chance to stick at shortstop and be really good in 2026, that's Tyler Bell from Kentucky. I love Tyler Bell. It's been that way for some time. He was a second round pick out of high school by the Rays, turned it down in favor of heading to Lexington, and it quickly paid dividends. He was excellent last year, hit 296 with 17 doubles and 10 home runs, showed enough polish to earn a spot with Team USA. His game is built on outstanding athleticism on both sides of the ball. He's a rangy, capable, and consistent defender. At the plate, he has a real feel for contact, destroys velocity, and while he does have some holes in his swing, changeups can be his enemy at times. The decisions hold up, and he pairs it with steady bat to ball and pretty good power. I will say, I don't think Tyler Bell's power gets enough love in conversations about him. 10 home runs is nothing to scoff at for a true freshman. I think we'll see more power this year, which will continue to elevate the profile. So we're talking about somebody who's going to hit, in my mind, at least 15 home runs. He's going to be a steady producer as a shortstop. He's going to make lots of contact. He's going to destroy fastballs in a fastball league, and he's just built to succeed. So do I think he's the best shortstop in this class? No, and I don't think it's even really close. I think Rock Chulaski has already run away with that title. But if I had to pick second place, I wouldn't feel too bad about putting Tyler Bell's name in that hat, and that is why I will have him round out my roster in what was a really fun game, Peter. I think this is going to end up being a cool exercise to take a look back at in a couple months and see how we did. To recap the teams quickly, I'll run through Peter's first. Rock Chulaski, Sawyer Strohsnyder, AJ Gracia, Jackson Flora, Tommy Lepore, MJ Bollinger, and Logan Hughes rounding out his squad. For me, it's Dax Whitney, Cameron Flukey, Drew Burris, Ace Reese, Trey Broussard, Santiago Garcia, and Tyler Bell rounding out the group. Four hitters, three pitchers, including one reliever for the two of us. This was fun. Peter, any final thoughts before we get out of here?
I echo your sentiments of it being a fun exercise. I think in addition to our weekly picks to click, which hopefully won't be as black and white between the first half and second half this year. It's a little bit more competitive. This will be a fun little side plot to follow and one that we can circle back on the podcast every few weeks. So it's hard to disagree. It's hard to say that both of our teams aren't, really high quality. These are prominent draft prospects, whether it be 26 or 27, and consistent college producers. So I think that they're each going to put up pretty impressive numbers, and it should be kind of a sprint to the finish, so to speak. I'm excited to see it, and that was a very fun exercise. Maybe we'll do something again, sort of a variation of it, either during the season or during the off season, another draft type of deal, because I think that those are always a lot of fun.
Well, there you go. We hope you enjoyed it as much as we did on this episode of the Baseball America College Baseball Podcast. Before we let you go, once again, head on over to baseballamerica.com/college. If you like what we do on the podcast, you're going to love what we do on the written side too. We are constantly turning out college content. We don't have an off season at Baseball America. And things are actually pretty busy right now with fall ball, Jupiter, like we said, coming up. That'll be a topic of conversation on our next show, which will be in 2 weeks and in the great month of October. I'll be going to make some stops throughout the country for fall ball to check in on some programs. And then before y'all know it, it's going to be time for the College Preview Magazine. We're going to have lots of preview content in terms of rankings, but it is already almost October, which means the college season is nigh. So again, baseballamerica.com/college. For Peter Flaherty, I'm Jacob Rudner, and we will see you next time.